Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Alive to Thrive. Happy spring, everyone, and wherever you're calling in from or listening, welcome. Our guest today is a man I've only known for a couple of months, but I actually feel like I've known him a lifetime. We've spent a lot of time together recently. His name is John Meadows, and he's launching a new company called Give Back Marketing here in St. Louis. It will be going national probably by next year, and it's a fascinating new concept with raising money for charities, and since that's been my background all my life, I was very interested in hearing John's fresh approach to helping charities raise funds from new sources. So welcome, John. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much, Brenda. Thank you for inviting me to be on your program.
Well, thanks for being with us today. I know you're just in pre-launch mode, just sort of like at NASA, the few weeks before a big rocket ship blasts off. Checking all the systems and making sure everything's firing correctly before liftoff. So thanks for taking some time with us. I thought we'd start first a little bit with your background because I like to get to know, I like our audience to get to know our guests, sort of what shaped them in their early years and how that influenced where they are today. So I understand you grew up in Oklahoma. Can you tell us a little bit about your background there?
Yeah, I'm a native of Oklahoma, northeast Oklahoma, a little town called Miami, or Miama. If you're local, you call it Miami. But it's a family of six. My parents both taught high school, and my mother taught junior high. My father taught high school as a full-time job, but we also had a farm, a cattle farm, about 300-acre cattle farm, and a great place for my two brothers and I to go down and spend the weekend, stay out of trouble kind of thing. So I had a pretty basic life growing up. Of course, we didn't have much money, so we had spent a lot of time in the gardens trying to feed the family through the winter kind of thing. We had beef, and you know, we've raised up very healthy and a good family life. I have three sisters. All of us are grown, and I do have a brother that's not well in Las Vegas. He's having cancer problems and not doing real well there. But anyway, we're all still pretty close. And I really, you know, again, I started out pretty humble beginnings, I guess. We grew up mostly working the farm and not doing a lot socially, I guess. I was very active in Boy Scouts, actually. That was kind of my outlet for socially as well as emotionally. I had a scoutmaster who didn't have any children of his own, so he pretty well adopted the troop of his family and his sons, and we did a lot of things. Went out to Philmont Scout Ranch, did a 60-mile trek out there one summer, and just really spent a lot of time together getting to know each other and helping people, and, you know, was able to stay in it and stay active and enjoy the appreciation for the outdoors, as well as for other people in need. We did a lot of philanthropic work through the troop, and actually was able to get my Eagle Scout honor and stayed active as a assistant until I went to college, went to Oklahoma State, and then graduated from there and went into business at that point.
Oh, interesting. Well, my dad was an Eagle Scout as well. We have several family members that have gone through that, and it does help young boys and young men develop leadership skills and certainly caring about their community. Did you do any volunteer work at any specific locations or out of the community?
Yeah, we had a couple of nursing homes that we sort of adopted as our, you know, mission, and we spent a lot of time with elderly, and that's actually was very helpful. As I got older, I have a real appreciation for elder care, and I had to take care of some relatives in their golden years, I guess, helping with health care issues as well as estate issues, that type of thing.
Well, and I think those are such important values, and to help, teach kids about connecting with others and doing service work and, getting away from the television or, you know, nowadays it's video games and to just, connect with other people. I think that's fantastic. And I love the charities out in the community that mentor kids and give kids those opportunities to do service work out there. And like you say, you never know how it will come in handy later in life with whether it's elder care issues or I think it's interesting that your parents were teachers and now you're leading an organization that will help schools raise funds as well as nonprofit organizations. And it sort of all comes around full circle, doesn't it?
It sure does. It's pretty ironic how things have come around to, I think, again, it's sort of a path that you lead through life, and my path has had its rocky spots and turns and, diversions, but at the end, I think it's all come together very well.
Now, did you ever see in your college years or after you got out and started entering the corporate marketplace, did you envision having your own business someday?
Yeah, I think I've always had that burn inside. I actually had a business when I was in my early 30s and got a taste of it then, had a successful business, had it for 5 years and sold it and then went back into corporate life. And so I've already had a taste of it when I was young, so I sort of learned learned the ropes and, learned hopefully what not to do in a lot of cases and, just through experience. And that's really how I view all my life's journey so far, is just really trying to learn what I can and hopefully not make the mistake too many times, hopefully avoid errors in the future. But it's pretty much try to learn what I can from each experience I've had.
So how do you go from being an entrepreneur, having your own business in your 30s, to sort of working at a very large company like a Purina, that I understand you worked at Purina and PetSmart. I mean, it's a totally different culture from, calling your own shots every day to a hierarchical structure of, working with the whole several layers of management. What was that like?
Well, yeah, luckily I didn't actually hit the corporate bureaucracy, you might say, until I was in my 30s after I sold my business. I actually started in sales, field sales with Purina right out of college. I was fortunate enough in the early 80s, it was a very down job market. I was one of the only ones that even got an offer to go to work right out of college. So real fortunate. I got with a really good company, Ralston Purina, and worked my way up through sales, got a district out in California, Arizona. And that really taught me at an early age management skills. Of course, I was a troop leader and all that stuff as a kid. So I think I had a good feel for managing people, and it actually worked out well that I did have an ability to do that. As a sales manager for Purina, I was one of the youngest ones. I was in my mid-20s over a pretty good sized geography, all of Arizona and Southern California, and had four adults, they're up in their 30s and 40s reporting to me, and I was real fortunate to have a really good team put together there. and we grew the market significantly while I was there. So, I learned a lot about managing people at that level and, you know, communicating through to corporate through channels. So I didn't get thrown into the corporate life as traditionally is perceived until I was really in my 30s after I'd owned my own business and, you know, had some management skills, developed some management skills in the field. So it was really a good experience that I think benefited me once I got into the corporate culture.
What do you think are some of the successful ways to build teams and manage people? What are some of the things you learned from working in groups, you know, as a young person? I mean, some people learn that about team, motivating teams through sports, but what do you see as some of the skill sets or the key elements of building a successful team?
Well, I think communication is the big one. I don't think you can over-communicate when you're working with a team. You know, that's the challenge I think most managers have. It's easy to get burrowed into, you know, their own responsibilities and forget the people that really helped you get there and keeping them up to speed on what's going on, what your expectations are of them. And that's always difficult, particularly when you're building a new company, because you don't really know what's around the corner, you know. So it's, you have to be, you know, try to be as communicate as well as you can with the information that you have available to you, but also, you know, keeping morale up and stuff. It's tough, you know, particularly when you're in sales and having to handle rejection all the time. It's a tough business, and you know, trying to get morale up and everybody on the same page and moving forward with the same vision and mission is, you know, can be challenging. But being inclusive is important, you know, where you can as a manager. Again, it really comes down to basic communication and respect. You really need to respect the people that are working for you and try to identify their strengths and weaknesses. You know, it's one of those things where people will migrate to their strengths, you know, just organically themselves. So you really have to identify those strengths as early as possible so you can sort of help direct them in the areas that they're happiest, they're going to be most effective, and utilize them for, you know, allow them to do what they're happy at, because they're not, people don't stay around long if they're doing things that they're not happy doing. So trying to build an environment and a role within the company that they feel are useful and you know, benefiting the overall cause is very important. So
in terms of, you know, handling rejection and keeping the sales team focused and motivated, you know, I heard someone say once that we're all selling something somewhere at some time to someone, whether we're referring a restaurant or a charity or a cause. So many people, I think, they will say, I don't like sales or I don't like fundraising because they see it as getting someone to do something they don't want to do, as opposed to being more of a facilitator and finding out the needs of that person or that customer and filling their needs. Mm-hmm. But in your industry and in your background with sales, you were dealing with large scale, I'm sure, numbers, corporate level, big regions, massive numbers of accounts. What, you know, is there a particular story where you saw a turnaround in someone on your team where they were hitting brick walls and then you provide some sort of coaching or direction and, you know, something clicked or they had a breakthrough?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have a couple of them. One of them was a particular new employee, didn't have a lot of experience, so that was part of the challenge, was having experience handling rejection, because that's really, in sales, that's what you really have to manage a lot of, is being able to emotionally get up every day. And, you know, particularly direct sales, I know some people that are in that end of it. That's even worse than corporate sales, because at least with corporate you have a brand and some recognition going in. But, you know, it's really keeping motivated and, you know, being able to personally have the internal strength to get you through those tough days when things just don't go well or you lose a big account. And, you know, your income's affected by it. So there's a sales is a very difficult field. But one thing that helped with this particular situation was I really was able to get one of my customers to really take him on as sort of a mentor of theirs, and actually have them work within the environment that he was trying to sell products to. And that worked out really well. He got a real appreciation for what the end result of his efforts are, and that's really to benefit the end consumer and make their lives, you know, better at the end. So that was really a good experience that got him to really understand why he was there every day. You know, granted, he had to take rejection, but at the end of the day, he's doing good for somebody and providing them a service or product that will benefit their lives. So having that perspective as a salesman is really important. And he didn't particularly have that. It was more of a personal, some personal issues he was handling. And that was enlightening for him. And he's actually still in, you know, selling and doing very well. So I think that was kind of a life-changing experience for him.
So what are some of the things you do personally on a daily basis to keep up your emotional energy and your internal strength? Certainly starting a new company is no small task, not for the weak of heart, the faint of heart, as they say. You know, not having that established brand in place. What are some of your daily activities or things you do to keep yourself sort of at the top of your game?
Well, I definitely, in the mornings, I'm kind of a morning person. I get up about 5:30 and try to have my own time. You know, people call it meditation. I don't know. I try to work out in the mornings and, you know, get a little bit of that in. But, you know, just sort of refocus and sort of map out my daily routine and sort of get myself organized for the day. And you have to be really organized to start a business. And, you know, you have to really keep focused and on track. So, you know, I'm big into making lists and that type of thing to sort of try to keep things as a priority, try to prioritize, because you only have a certain amount of time in a day, but trying to prioritize that time to where it keeps you, you know, moving forward, assuming that you will have some setbacks every day you have to deal with. But you, as long as you keep moving forward, then that keeps you pretty much positive that you're making progress, and, you know, ultimately the end result will come to fruition. But, you know, being patient, that's probably the biggest thing I've learned over time is patience and understanding it does take time, particularly when other factors are involved, people and environment, various other business climates and things that are involved in running a business. You really have to be patient and sort of, you know, walk it through sometimes a slower pace than you'd like, but at the end, it's probably good that you do slow processes down a little bit and not get too rushed. But, you know, that's really pretty much it. I have a real supportive wife and my daughter, and she's married and out of the house now, but they've been very helpful over the years trying to, you know, keep me reinforced and positive and overcome the bad spots and, you know, just kind of keep things focused and, you know, just sort of keep on life's plan. And that's what I try to do is, you know, always look a few years in advance where I'd like to be and what I'd like to do and sort of, you know, move towards that on a daily basis.
So, you know, in this economy, several times people have hit places in their life where things didn't go according to plan and they had to reinvent themselves. And I understand you were working in the corporate field for a number of years, being very successful and traveling and working in the Southwest, as you said, and in California. But you did hit that point in your career where you faced a layoff. And, you know, life one day was very different than the day before. And so how did you sort of pick yourself up and regroup? And what's your advice to other people that, you know, might find themselves in that position where things are not turning out the way they thought they would and they had to kind of do some soul searching and reinvent themselves? Tell us about your story there.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple, but I think probably the biggest re-engineering of myself I did was back when a lot of people were affected back in 2009, spring of 2009, after the recession of 08, and we're still in, I guess, but after the primary recession hit in 08, fall of 08, the company I was with was an agency, a marketing firm, and they were able to squeak by until spring of 09, and they pretty well just had to lay off half the company and just were re-engineer their organization, and I was one of the victims of that layoff. So at that point, you know, the job market was pretty well flat. There wasn't a lot of opportunity, and I it was actually good timing because I had an aunt I needed to spend a lot of time in Oklahoma with who needed my help. She was dying of cancer, and I was needing to spend a lot of time with her. And then she passed away that summer. But it was fortunate that I was able to spend time with her in her final few months, which was great. But also, I sort of thought through what my life needed to be. Again, another 5 years out. I knew I needed at that point to learn about online marketing and various aspects of the internet that I really hadn't learned as well as I could have through traditional agencies and corporate that I'd been working with before, because the internet really changed a lot of business models, and it was really I knew there was a wave of the future. It's just too efficient for businesses not to go online in one aspect or another. So I consciously decided, well, I need to, you know, sort of re-engineer myself to learn the space. And so that's when I actually started doing some consulting work. Again, I was able to balance my personal life with the consulting, and that worked out well. And I started working with some technology companies that I knew. And they hired me as marketing and sales consultant, branding consultant for them. And I got to learn quite a bit about different aspects of online marketing. One of them is email marketing. Learned a lot about that, which now I'm using in my own company. I've also learned a lot about search engine optimization, pay-per-click, marketing, and various other aspects of online communication that I'm actually able to utilize in my own business now. But through that process, I also decided, well, it's maybe time to go back to school, okay? So I it's actually a window of opportunity that I took advantage of. I went back and got my MBA, graduated in 2011 with that. So that was a good experience. It allowed me to, again, sort of improve my resume for employment, as well as learning a lot about business and other aspects of operating a business that I sort of learned on my own through just School of Hard Knocks and through other mentors I've had, but also, you know, learned a lot about international business, which was real interesting. So I through that two, three-year period there, I really remodeled my knowledge base as well as technology knowledge that I'm actually able to kind of fortunately bring it all together with the new company I'm forming. So,
well, fantastic. And before we start talking about that company, I do want to talk a little bit about the field of brand marketing. I did some research this morning. It was kind of interesting because I think most people like myself think of brand marketing as something that's been in the last 10 to 20 years with companies like Procter Gamble and Gamble and other consumer product companies, you know, branding their products. But it actually goes back quite a ways to the 1880s, 1800s, and this was something I just did not know, having been in a sorority myself, that some fraternities and sororities would brand, literally brand their initiation, during an initiation rite as a form of identification and bonding. And it's been, of course, long abandoned because it's been a form of, seen as a form of hazing.
Right.
But, and then criminals were branded as a form of punishment and identification. And then in France, they branded sometimes a person's cheek with a fleur-de-lis. They branded an S in England on someone's cheek, but in France, they branded a fleur-de-lis on the shoulder, which I thought, well, I wouldn't mind a fleur-de-lis myself. But how did you first come to understand this huge concept of brand marketing? When were you introduced to that? Early on in your career when you were first getting into sales?
Yeah, you know, coming up through corporate with Purina, it's all about brand for them. So I really understood early the value of brand marketing, because, you know, that's really what they relied heavily on, the checkerboard, you know, and understanding the value of that and the power of that as far as perception before you even have a meeting with the prospect. I mean, there's already a perception about the company because of that branding that they've spent 100 years on, okay, that they've invested in over 100 years. And that's a difficult thing I think a lot of companies and individuals have a difficult time with, is that branding doesn't happen overnight unless there's a, you know, a major incident that that gets it out in front of everybody. But normally it takes a while to build a brand and create a reputation, and good, bad, or indifferent, it does take time to build that. And I was fortunate to really appreciate the power of that, of branding at the consumer level when I was with Purina. So
there's a well-known personal brand expert named Lethea Owens, and she coaches works with individuals as well as companies. And I love on her website, she talks about, you know, the need to create a powerful and distinctive brand that captivates, fascinates, inspires, influences, and engages others to become advocates of who you are and who your unique promise of value. So what do you think your personal brand is, John?
Well, I think, I need to reflect back on my childhood again, back in my scouting days, that I think my brand was really sort of formed at that point in life. You know, I think everybody sort of likes to see themselves presented as a certain brand, but it really comes down to your inner core and what your beliefs are personally and how well you can execute that brand promise. And there's actually, I don't know if you're familiar with the Scout Oath, but there's really and it's really neat. You sort of think about what you remember even at a young age. And this is, Scout Oath is really a part of scouting that, you know, they always had us recite in each one of our programs and meetings. And eventually, you know, you say something enough, then you'll actually believe it, okay? And it'll become part of you. And that oath is basically coordinates around three principles, okay? And that's duty to God and country is the number one. And these are based on priority. Duty of other people, okay? And duty to self. And I think putting other people before self and putting God above everything, God and country, is, you know, I think those are my principles that hopefully my brand does reflect, okay? So I don't know if you call this a tagline or what, but I think those are core principles that I try to develop my brand around, and hopefully that reflects, you know, and to
we're going to take a quick break and have a station identification. When we come back with John Meadows, we're going to continue talking about branding, but we're going to kind of step it up a notch and start talking about nonprofit organizations and how they can create a strong brand and be successful in their community and leverage the power of their supporters to help continue growing their organization. So you're listening to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes after a brief station identification and thanks.
You might know me. I'm 50 Cent. You may follow my tweets, my Facebook friends. Odds are a few in a 6 degrees separate us. We're that close. What's crazy is 1 in 6 don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends. Hunger's too close for us to ignore. So visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find your local food bank to see how you can make a difference. From one close friend to another, let's do this. I'm 50 Cent, and together we are Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser on GGM. And now, back to the show.
Hello, and welcome back to Alive to Thrive. My guest today is John Meadows of Give Back Marketing. And we've been talking about personal values and branding, personal branding. We want to start talking in a broader sense about what branding could mean to nonprofit organizations and how the importance of establishing their brand in the community can help nonprofit organizations raise money, raise awareness, recruit more volunteers, and expand their mission and purpose. This is something personally very important to me. I've devoted my life to helping nonprofits in Washington, D.C., Denver, Colorado, and now here in Missouri. And I met John a couple of months ago at the Community Council of St. Charles County, which is an umbrella organization for about 200 nonprofit groups in the St. Charles County area. And what struck me pretty soon, within seconds or moments of meeting John, you know, was his personal brand. He was a man of integrity. He came across very honest and directly and, He didn't really seem to have any either hidden agendas or any, as we say, skeletons in the closet. He sort of seemed very transparent as a person. He was very direct, and I like that. It sort of stood out from this particular networking event we were at. A lot of times, people, sort of are withdrawn or they're there because they have to be for their job. And I don't know, I just really found John interesting. And we got to know each other and got to know a little bit more about what he's building with this new company called Give Back Marketing. So, John, tell us a little bit about Give Back Marketing and what you hope to accomplish with getting it launched next month.
Okay, well, thank you, Brent. I appreciate the kind words. And it was definitely a good fortune that we did meet because you've been real helpful in our early journey here, getting things set up and hopefully that in the future. So, Give Back Marketing was actually a concept that I had with a private partner that I have in the company. We were brainstorming some things back almost a year ago, trying to figure out ways of helping schools with fundraising and that type of thing. And because he comes from a more of an education background, and he knew that I had a pretty good business mind, so he approached me with his concept, and I started looking at it. I go, wow, this is pretty dynamic, you know, with some modifications. I think it, you know, could have some real value, but I think that we're overlooking a huge need in the nonprofit sector, you know, because nonprofits today, as you know, are many of them are in need of funding and awareness, branding, personal branding as far as the mission, the cause that they have. And part of that, again, gets back to communication. You know, not many of them are come from, not many people that run nonprofits and even school nonprofit foundations and things really have an experience in marketing or branding. They're there because they have a passion for the mission, okay? And you need that. You need that driver, just like any corporation. You need that person at the top that really has a vision for the organization and where they see the value to society for that mission. And but they don't necessarily know how to communicate it clearly and succinctly to the potential investors or donors in the nonprofit sector. And so it's difficult sometimes to raise the funds, and you know, so much of funding's not available. It's going to be probably less in the future, so it's going to have to, they're going to have to depend more on increasing their brand awareness and awareness to find the people that it resonates with. Because at the bottom of the real reason people support causes, they usually have a personal connection to that. They either have a family that is in need or has been in need for an individual themselves, have a need for the mission work or support groups or whatever the nonprofit might stand for and do. So you have to really find a way to communicate personally to that potential supporter. And until they feel motivated to give you money that, you know, it's worthy of their financial support and time support, then, you know, that can take a while. So we were talking, and we actually came up with, based off of my previous experience, a whole new concept in fundraising that really nobody has ever done before. No organization's ever put this type of program together for nonprofits to raise significant money in a new way, tap into a whole new revenue stream that they never had access to, as well as increase their supporter base.
That sounds really fantastic, and I think it's going to catch on like wildfire, because my experience is that I've seen a lot of nonprofits struggle with raising funds, as well as just, you know, staying in touch with their supporters and getting the message out. It seems like they get so busy doing who knows what, all the various things that sometimes a development director has to do as a one-person department, that sometimes their email marketing, you know, takes a lower priority than some other things that might be glaring at them in their face, or you know, something they have to do that they think is more important. But there's nothing as important, really, as maintaining a good brand and good communications with your supporters, and to differentiate yourself. I mean, I think the nonprofits that differentiate themselves in the marketplace, that have a unique proposition, and I'm not just talking service delivery, I'm talking about how they identify in the community through their events and through their marketing materials. Those are the ones that are succeeding regardless of the economy. They're raising more money. They're attracting quality board members. And I've seen this time and time again where groups will say, oh, X, Y, or Z reason, we can't raise money in this economy. And then I'll see another organization that is just going to town, raising millions of dollars, breaking all their previous records. And often those groups have brought in someone from the business world to help them and turn their organization around. And so I think what you will be offering to nonprofit groups will be really valuable on many levels. And so what kind of response have you been seeing so far?
Well, very positive. Like you said, we're just now launching it. We're sort of at a pre-launch stage. We're not officially launching it to large groups until our April 4th meeting that we can talk about in a little bit. But so far, it's been very positive. I had a good discussion with YMCA this morning, and it looks like they're going to be coming on board one of their areas. And, you know, it's just been real positive. The challenge is it is a unique approach to fundraising that they kind of have to get their heads wrapped around, you know. But the ones that get it, really get it, and they see the real value in using it in a number of ways, they're real creative about how to use the programs that we've developed, and the ones that are very, I guess, aware of the value of email marketing and business sponsorship, you know, there's kind of depends on the organization as far as if, you know, how they traditionally have raised funds. And those that really want to focus on businesses as a significant element of their fundraising, this is ideal for them because it does tap into a stream of income for the nonprofits that businesses have been spending significant money through general advertising for, you know, for decades. So the market that they're actually able to tap into is worth about $172 billion that they've never had access to. And that's general advertising that's going through six major conglomerates up on Wall Street, and it's leaving the community. So we're allowing businesses now to invest their advertising dollar back into the local community to support schools and nonprofits through their advertising dollar.
So the exact program is that you will help a nonprofit organization design their email marketing messages, help put that together, the mechanics, the logistics, they write the message. Then you have both business sponsors from your network as well as from their own list. They might have some businesses that they've been talking to but haven't really been performing for them in terms of donors and donations. Maybe they support the annual event once a year or their, you know, walk or whatever it is they're doing once a year. I have talked to so many business people that say they never hear from the charity in between those events, that the charity goes from event to event, but they don't really think about how to engage their business partners strategically, you know, throughout the year. And so this might be the ideal way to have a partnership with a business that, again, might already be involved with a nonprofit, but there's, as we know, charitable dollars that come from a business, and then there's marketing dollars. And there's very few nonprofits I have witnessed that have known how to tap into the marketing dollars. And 'cause most nonprofit staff, let's face it, they're not trained in marketing. They might, you know, some are, you know, I don't want to make a big generalization, but they don't have the staff or the resources to do what Give Back Marketing will bring to them, correct? Would you say?
That's very true. And, you know, traditionally it's been, like you said, it's kind of been a one-way street for businesses to get engaged with nonprofits. You know, it's through charitable donations. You know, somebody needs money for an event, and they ask the business owner for a donation, and they do it, and then they never contact them to follow up. And it's just been a one-way dialogue, okay? And businesses, there are those that are generous, and they're willing to support any way they can. But if you ever gave them a chance to give more, and they got a benefit in return, okay, such as potential new customers for their business, then you know, they're very receptive to this type of offer. The businesses are, because it gives the nonprofit an opportunity to actually give back to the businesses, okay? And that's through helping the businesses increase their brand awareness through this program and increase their customers. And at the end of the day, have they actually a better return on investment for their advertising dollar than what they're spending through traditional media today?
I love it. And I know for the charity side that they have seen a 20% increase in annual giving. The charities and nonprofits that have engaged in some type of email marketing campaigns have seen, on the average, about 20% increase, not only in the number of individual gifts from new donors, but also the overall dollar amount. Now, 20% increase, that's kind of unheard of in any venture. I mean, if you have a 5 to 10% increase from one year over to the next, you're doing pretty well. But to have a 20% increase in the bottom line, on the development side, the income to that charity, I think that most boards of directors would be pretty darn happy with a 20% increase in their annual budget.
That's very true. And there's also some other cause-related marketing is really growing. There's corporations have been aware of cause-related marketing for a number of years. But normally it's a large corporation, and they have a staff of people that can, you know, really support that initiative. And it's primarily to build goodwill and, you know, get their brand associated with a viable cause that benefits them from a cause-related perspective. And there's a few statistics out there that businesses that are in cause-related marketing really understand, and that's why they do it. But a lot of the smaller, mid-sized businesses don't really understand the impact that cause-related marketing can provide them as an optional advertising opportunity for them. And one statistic that's been proven a number of times over is that consumers are 70% more likely to purchase goods and services from a business that supports a cause they believe in. Okay, that's a huge competitive advantage when you're talking business climate these days. You know, it's tough for small, medium-sized businesses because it's so competitive that they need any sort of advantage, market advantage they can get, and this really provides them a significant market advantage for their dollar, I guess, advertising dollar, you might say, versus traditional media. So there's a real competitive advantage for businesses, and statistically, 47% of consumers have bought a brand at least monthly that support a cause, okay? And that's actually up 47% since 2010. So consumers are more aware of cause-related marketing. They're actually adjusting their buying habits to buy more brands that support causes, and that's significant. Another good stat I might mention is 79% of consumers would switch brands if the price and quality were equal, okay? So, and 90% of consumers want companies to tell them how much they support causes. So cause-related marketing is, and part of that's generational, okay? Because as you know, millennials are very socially conscious, and I think for nonprofits to capture the young and upcoming donors and supporters that they're going to have to depend on, and you know, now and in the future, they have to be able to reach out and get those younger, more cause-related consumers. So cause-related marketing is here to stay, and how businesses and nonprofits leverage that for their own benefits is going to be vital. And that's really what we help, is to bridge that gap between nonprofits and for-profit in helping both sides of the equation increase their cause-related efforts and increase their own goodwill in communities to, you know, get more people to support their causes and businesses through this cause-related paradigm that's happening.
Well, I think that is so true that people do adjust their buying habits and will go to a business that is known or advertising as associated with a cause or a particular charity. Here in St. Louis, there's Ashley Furniture has been advertising on television their partnership with Nurses for Newborns, and Carroll House has been year-round advertising their support for animal welfare. That gives me a good feeling that if I'm going to go out and buy a mattress or a couch or something, I am certainly going to go to one of those two businesses versus a business that's not doing that. And, you know, over the course of 30 years when I've been raising money for various charities, and I had to go to various businesses, whether they were locally owned or corporate chains, those that supported the events or the causes that I was representing at the time, those are businesses I would tell my friends, hey, this business, they are fantastic. Every time I go there, they donate. This other business, not so much. And, I mean, it's been 10 or 15 years, and I, you know, I won't name the certain chain of restaurant that I, you know, that I have continued to tell people. And, you know, the amount of money companies spend on marketing is a very big number. And to damage their own brand by not being supportive of the nonprofit community, I don't know. That's just not smart business. We've seen more and more businesses, though, catching on. A restaurant here that's now national, Tucano's, is having a charity focus for their grand opening in St. Louis, St. Charles, and picking four charities that they're supporting over the next couple of weeks. And, you know, businesses of all sizes can do this. So we need to get the nonprofits up to speed, as you said, to learn more about this industry and to take advantage and leverage these business advertising dollars that are out there by being part of the Give Back Marketing Network. And so the launch event in St. Louis, let's talk about that. That's April 4th. Coming up at the Regional Arts Commission in University City. And what can people expect, nonprofit groups or board members and staff who are attending that event, what can they expect, John, on April 4th at that launch event?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I appreciate it, Brenda. Yeah, it's really a group of nonprofits and schools that we'll be talking to. We have a number of businesses that have reached out to us saying, look, we really want to support what you're doing. We just need to learn more, want to talk to people. So we're probably going to have another program specifically targeting businesses, because it's really a different message that we have for businesses that we need to talk to them directly about and the benefits that they, on their side of the equation, need to realize. But as far as the nonprofit and school presentation that we have on the 4th, we're pretty much going to just go through the program, explain what it is, how it benefits them, and open it up for questions. And, you know, if there's any questions at all, then, and if they want, we can have some one-on-ones after that. We'll have a sign-up sheet for people to sign up for personal meetings if they feel that they need that to sort of, you know, walk through specific situations they have, or just more feel more comfortable talking one-on-one about their situation versus in a public forum. So we're going to make it very inclusive. We'll have customers there. We'll have partners. We have a number of partners that are working with us that will be there to answer questions. So partner service firms that we've gotten on board. So we'll have pretty much be able to answer any questions about what Give Back Offers is all about and what Give Back Marketing Group is all about. So, you know, I think if they're at all have any questions at all, we do have a website. It's www.givebackoffers.com. There's a good video on there that kind of talks about, you know, the reason for organizations, nonprofits, and schools to embrace the concept, and then we have actual details about what each one of the audiences that are, you know, can take advantage of the program, what resonates, you know, what specific information is relevant to their particular organization. So pretty good website. It's new and we're still working on it, of course, but it should have most of the information that they need. Also, there's ability to sign up for the program right online. This makes it really easy.
Great. So I want to repeat those again. It's givebackoffers.com. There is an online application. If you're a nonprofit organization in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, do go ahead and take a look at that video and look at the material on that website. If you're outside of the Missouri area, Give Back Marketing will be expanding nationally in the coming months and year. Please do contact John or myself at, there's a Facebook page as well, and that's Give Back Marketing, Give Back MKTG. So that's the Facebook page, and then the Twitter address is at Give Back MKTG. So follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and let us know if you're in another city. We've already gotten calls from Houston and from some other places that are interested in bringing this concept to their local community, because I think, again, that, you know, nonprofits need to get, you know, to attract new donations and try some new things. The old way of doing fundraising is just not sustainable. Grants have dried up a lot in the last few years with what happened in the stock market in the 2009, 2010, and new groups that are coming along, new nonprofit organizations that are building their brand and building their donor base. You know, now's the time to start looking outside the box for some new concepts that that could really benefit your organization. So, John, what is your email address if people have questions and they want to write you an email?
Yeah, it's J as in John, just jmeadows@givebackoffers.com.
Okay, so jmeadows@givebackoffers.com. And there will be a launch event May 9th, the second Thursday of May, in St. Charles at the Economic Development Center for the charities based in the St. Charles area. And again, if you're in an area outside of this market, because we do have listeners around the state and around the country, please contact John or contact them on their Facebook page. Ask your questions. There's no question that is silly, because, you know, I think John is very committed to helping people advance their own personal knowledge, but talking to individuals and board members who want to help their favorite charity attract new donations. So any closing thoughts, John, or any other things?
I guess there's some important elements, and it's almost too hard for nonprofits and schools to believe, is there's really no upfront cost or reoccurring fees for this program. And since we do all the work, then there's really no need to increase staffing levels and various other concerns that some of these smaller organizations have. So, and the question is, well, how do you make money? Well, we make money based off how much we can help you raise money from these advertising businesses. So it's a revenue share based off of how much revenue we can generate for you from the businesses, and we take a portion of that and for our fees. So we don't make money till you make money, and it's a great model, low risk, no risk for the organization. And another real important aspect, since it is dependent on email marketing, that the data that we receive, we don't actually receive, it goes to a third party for sending out the emails. It's all very secure. Okay, there's no selling of data, no sharing of data. It's always your data, and you have total control over your information, and it's always secure.
Well, that sounds great. Well, thank you, John, again, and we'll be back next Friday on Alive to Thrive with Bill Donius, who wrote a New York Times best-selling book called Thought Revolution. And that will be another fascinating interview with an interesting person here from the St. Louis area. So send us your suggestions on Facebook, facebook.com/AliveToThrive. Thank you, everyone, and have a beautiful weekend. Thanks again, John.
Thank you.